This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're doing essentially an update on immigration and nationality law issues. We did one a few months ago, but there's an awful lot going on, and I thought for those of you who may be interested in this area, we'd do another one without waiting too long. My guests are Mary Waltermeyer, immediate past chair of the Immigration and Nationality Law Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. She's a partner in the Sacramento law firm of Schloenleber and Waltermeyer. My other guest is Kelly McCown, partner in the San Francisco law firm of McCown and Evans. My guests are specialists in immigration and nationality law certified by the Board of Legal Specialization. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible, I guess, by what? The Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies 11 fields of law. Let me tell you what they are very briefly. Not only immigration and nationality law, but appellate law, bankruptcy law, criminal law, estate planning, trust and probate law, family law, franchise and distribution law, taxation law, workers' compensation law, legal malpractice law, and admiralty and maritime law. Additional funding is provided by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Very nice to have you back, Kelly. And Mary, how is Sacramento?
It's a little too warm for January and dry as a bone.
Oh, I mean, the whole state. We are faced with a very serious problem, and hopefully we'll get through it. In any event, would you both talk a little bit about what are you seeing in your respective offices right now in the area of immigration and nationality law? Could we start with you, Mary, briefly?
Sure. One of the most common scenarios I see are a husband and wife coming in. One of them is a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident, and the spouse does not have legal status, and they want to know how to get legal status. Many folks believe that if you marry a U.S. citizen, you're automatically guaranteed a green card. Unfortunately, it's far more complicated than that, and for some people it's possible, and for some people it's not.
When you say for some people it's possible, some are not, what's going on there? What's the criteria?
The immigration laws are very complicated, and there are different provisions that might prevent you from getting legal status. The common examples are you entered the United States without inspection. That's the technical term for coming in without a visa illegally. You might have been here for more than a year without permission. You overstayed your visa, or you didn't have one in the first place, and then you left. If you've ever made any kind of a false statement, mm-hmm. either at the airport or the border or when applying for a visa, and, of course, criminal convictions, even minor ones.
Wow.
So for some of those folks, there may be something that's possible. There may be a waiver. For other people, there isn't. And for example, if you come in without a visa, you will most likely have to go back to your home country in order to apply to immigrate legally through your spouse.
So let me, if I may, ask you this. If someone, a U.S. citizen, goes to some other country and marries someone, you as a U.S. citizen can't bring your spouse into this country just automatically, even for a short period of time?
No, and
wow.
People get mm-hmm. trapped in that. If you're married to a U.S. citizen, the chance of you being given a visa to come here and visit are extremely small.
I think that's right, and I actually met with a couple today who were very shocked when I told them that by getting married, they might make it more difficult for the foreign spouse to visit. And they've been, you know, they're a retired couple who have been living half-time in Canada, half in the U.S. And they assume that, well, if we get married, then all of our problems will be solved. And it's often quite the opposite.
Even someone, one of the persons, one of the spouses is a Canadian, or a potential spouse, is a Canadian citizen, even has a problem.
Yes.
Oh, my.
They may if it's not done correctly.
Oh, my. Wow. Incredible. What is the, what if, for example, someone is here who's a U.S. citizen and has family in some other country. Let me just say, for example, Mexico, and wants to bring some of the family members. And I'm not talking about a spouse, but I'm talking about maybe a parent or maybe a brother or a sister or something like that. How difficult is it to bring someone like that into the country?
It depends on the family relationship and other factors. There are provisions where you can immigrate brothers and sisters, parents, children, but not more extended family members. Once you get outside of spouses of U.S. citizens or parents of adult U.S. citizens or children under 21 of U.S. citizens, you get into the waiting lists. And the waiting list can be decades long.
Oh, my. Wow. What is it, for example, if someone who's a U.S. citizen wants to bring his or her parent who happens to live somewhere else into this country as a to be here legally, what kind of a waiting list would that be for a parent?
For the parent of a U.S. citizen, they're considered to be immediate relatives, so there is not a waiting list for them.
Oh, okay. All right.
But on the flip side, if you have a child who is married or who is over 21, that's not an immediate relative. And depending on what country you're from, it can take a very long time to legally immigrate them.
Oh, wow. What about you, Kelly? What's going on? What do you see? What's happening in your office?
Well, I think on the last program, Chuck, we talked a little bit about the Supreme Court's decision in the Windsor case that happened at the end of June.
Yes.
Which made it possible for same-sex couples to sponsor foreign spouses and fiancés for green cards, which wasn't the case before. And so I'm seeing a lot of couples coming forward and wanting to get married, sponsoring the fiancé abroad for a fiancé visa to come and join the partner in the U.S. And those cases are going through the system. They're getting approved. They're being interviewed by immigration. So far, so good. We're seeing, you know, really no major issues or problems with those cases. Nothing really different than any other case of an opposite sex married couple.
What's the waiting period though on same sex?
It's exactly the same as it would be with any other couple.
I got it. Okay. All right. What about Kelly? What about employment based waiting and the waiting list for people who are thinking of either staying here or coming here for employment reasons?
There are waiting lists, Chuck, for employment-based categories, too. So even if someone is sponsored for a green card through their employer, depending on the person's educational background and the requirements of the position, there are different categories that the case would fall into. And for just to give you an example, somebody from Europe who has a master's degree could be sponsored by the employer and get a green card in about a year, year and a half, something like that. But somebody from India with maybe a bachelor's degree and 2 years of experience when he joined the employer might take him 10, 15 years to get a green card. So there's a very wide disparity based on the country of birth and the qualifications of the person along with the requirements of the position.
Your example of the employee in India is that employee has been working for the American employer, but that employee has been in India working. Is that right?
No, he's actually been in the United States.
Okay, I got it.
He started the process in about 2003.
Really?
And filed the first step of the green card. The employer filed the first step of the green card, the labor certification, in 2003. And his priority date is still not current, which is like his place in line.
He is allowed to stay here during this period.
He's actually holding an H-1B work visa.
What does that mean?
That's a work visa that's for high-skilled workers. Mm-hmm. He's an engineer, and it allows people to be here and work, renew it in 3-year increments. So if you're in the green card process and you're waiting for your place in line to come up, your employer can continue to renew that H-1B in 3-year periods until you get your green card.
Would you both talk a little bit about the recent decision by the California Supreme Court involving the young man who had spent much of his life in the United States? He was not, of course, born here, but his parents came here. He came here as a young child. He went back to, I think it was Mexico for a while, came back here, went to high school, went to college, went to law school here, took the state bar, passed it. His name is Sergio Garcia, who recently the California Supreme Court has said is entitled to practice law in California. Would you talk a little bit about that? Because my understanding is, even though he's allowed to practice law in California now, that he cannot be hired by some other business or law firm. He has to have his own private practice. Isn't that right?
That's right.
That is
correct. So would you talk a little bit about that? Were you surprised at what happened here with Mr. Garcia?
I wasn't sure what the outcome would be, but I was very hopeful. I can't say I was surprised, but I was very happy. There is nothing that specifically ties a law license to what your immigration status may be.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have lawful immigration status, you don't have work permission. Mm-hmm. Work permission is enforced by, under the immigration scheme, all employers are supposed to be verifying that their employees do indeed have permission to be working here, which is why he could not go to work for any company or law firm.
Mary, as I understand it, he had been waiting many years in a status to have authorization to actually be, I'm not sure whether it's a U.S. citizen, or I guess it's a U.S. citizen, and it seems to have taken many, many, many years, and it's still not resolved.
That's right. He's actually, you know, caught up in these waiting times that Mary was talking about. I believe his father sponsored him for permanent residence, if I'm not mistaken.
And I believe the visa petition was filed sometime in the mid-90s.
That's my recollection, yes.
So he's stuck in these waiting lists.
Incredible.
That we were discussing. If you are from Mexico and you're over 21 and your parent is either a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident, a visa is only available if they started this process before 1993, more than 20 years ago.
Oh, my. Wow.
If you are from Canada or Africa or Europe, the waiting list is more like six to eight years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is because not only do we have limits on the number of visas available, we have limits for every country, and those limits are the same for every country.
Hmm. For example, if someone wants to be here legally and someone wants to get a visa, there's an issue of if you've been convicted of a crime, or if you as a victim of a crime, you're here not, let's say, legally, but you're a victim of a crime. I'd like you, if you would, to talk about this area, because my understanding is that if you, although are here illegally, but you've been a victim of a crime, if you cooperate with the police or whoever is investigating this on behalf of the government, whether it's the police department, the sheriff's office, whatever it may be, if you are cooperative with them in terms of the investigation of the crime, this may help you in terms of being able to apply for a visa or be here and get authorized permission to stay here. Would you talk, Mary, a little bit about this?
The visa you're talking about is one of the brighter spots in the last decade in immigration law. It's called a U visa. It is for victims of serious crimes who have cooperated with law enforcement, and the law enforcement agency or district attorney's office has to certify that you have indeed been cooperative. A U visa is a temporary visa. It's good for 4 years. Depending on where the crime occurred, you may have an easier or harder time doing this. And in general, it's for the victims of serious crimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. More than just shoplifting or purse snatching, this kind of thing. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, okay. Absolutely would not qualify if you got into attempted murder or rape.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Of course, that is possible. Mm-hmm. But the law enforcement agencies have to sign off, which means that they have the power to say, yes, we want to give you an opportunity to do this with immigration, or no, we don't. And sometimes it comes down to funding constraints for the law enforcement agencies. Well, if it's not a priority, you don't assign a staff member, and mm-hmm. none of these get signed.
One of the things, I'm going to come back just for a moment to the H-1B visa, the high-skilled workers. Apparently there's a time period, April 1st is a magic date. What is that, Kelly? What's that all about?
Well, the H-1B is a visa with an annual cap. So this means that every year employers are limited in filing H-1B petitions for people who need it for the first time. So someone is subject to that cap, which is currently $65,000 for the whole country per year. You're subject to that cap if you've never had an H-1B before, mm-hmm. haven't had one in the last 6 years. So this would be typically people who are being sponsored for their first H-1B and they're abroad. So they're coming here from abroad. It also includes students who are here on student visas, who are now graduating and getting their first real job. Mm-hmm. So they get a period of practical training, and then they usually are then sponsored for an H-1B by the employer. And then people in other visa types who happen to get a job offer and would like to work in the United States. It's typically for people with who are more on the high-skilled end, because the job has to require at least a bachelor's degree mm-hmm. to qualify for the H-1B category.
I see.
So every year, April 1st, is the deadline for employers to submit petitions for people they want to sponsor.
Both people who are still, who are here or may come into this country? Is that
correct?
What you're saying? Okay. All right.
Anybody who's subject to that initial cap. Mm-hmm. And April 1st is the first possible filing deadline for mm-hmm. jobs that will begin on October 1st, which is the government's fiscal year, the start of the government's fiscal year.
I see.
So this is the first quarter, very busy period in employment-based immigration, because a lot of the companies are, you know, technology companies and others are really desperate for talent, and they find somebody who meets their requirements and they want to sponsor them, and they have to wait a good at least six months to bring them on board, because they have to sponsor them 6 months ahead of the start date.
This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about immigration and nationality law issues. If you are listening to us live, in a few minutes, I'll give you the local phone number. You can call in. Let me mention to you that next week is our regular Call a Lawyer night. We'll have a number of attorneys here, certified specialists and other attorneys who are covering other areas that have not yet become certified specialists, and that will be next week on January 29th, starting at 7 o'clock. If you want to put it on your calendar. And also the phone number, 1-800-525-9917, is the Call a Lawyer number, 1-800-525-9917. In a few minutes, I'll give our local phone number so you can call in if you have an immigration or nationality law issue, question, whatever. You'll be able to talk with my guests, who are Mary Waltermeyer. She's the immediate past chair of the Immigration and Nationality Law Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. My other guest is Kelly McCown, and both of them are specialists in immigration and nationality law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. What it means is they've jumped over a lot of hoops or a lot of hurdles to become certified specialists. They had to practice a number of years after passing the state bar exam, and then they had to take another exam to be a certified specialist, and they have to be approved by people who know who they are and know what kind of work they do. And I hope I haven't abbreviated this too much, but it's not a simple matter, is it, Kelly, to become a certified specialist?
I think that, I mean, in immigration, I think the, maybe the challenge is that you really need to be well-rounded to become a certified specialist. And immigration is such a complex and broad field, really, that you have to have experience in a variety of different areas, not just one subject area like employment-based immigration or family-based immigration, but experience doing waivers, experience with maybe removal defense cases, asylum cases.
Removal means, what does that mean? Removal.
That's like deportation proceedings.
Try to help this person stay here as opposed to being deported. Yes, go ahead. Pardon me.
So and Mary could definitely chime in on this, I'm sure, but it's, I think it's because people do tend to specialize in our field quite a bit in terms of the type of practice and what kinds of cases they take. It makes it a bit difficult for newer practitioners to have experience in all this area, all these different areas.
Mary, I wonder if you would talk a bit about some years ago in my position as a deputy DA for San Mateo County. I had at least a couple of cases involving immigration consultants who were not attorneys, who I brought unfair business practices actions against, not criminal but civil actions. What concerns do you still have, if you have any, about people who are immigration consultants? And what recommendations do you have for persons who are trying to get some help to either get a visa or be here legally in some way?
Immigration consultants cause incredible heartbreak. We regularly, weekly basis, sometimes a daily basis, have people come in whose immigration cases are a complete mess, or they've had a family member deported.
Mm-hmm.
And immigration with each passing year gets more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
An immigration consultant is simply someone that has posted a bond with the state of California and hung up a sign saying, now I'm helping people with immigration. They're not attorneys. There are no training requirements.
There's no exam? There's no exam, Mary?
There is certainly no exam.
Oh, boy. Wow.
And it's been a problem in immigrant communities probably since immigration to the U.S. started. The immigrant communities are especially vulnerable. They're looking for people that speak their own language. Money, the cost can be an issue, although there are a lot of immigration consultants that charge far more than reputable attorneys do. They're well-meaning folks that don't know what they're doing and make a mess. There are other folks that are just absolute fraudsters.
What do you recommend, both of you, what do you recommend in terms of someone who is trying to get help to be here in this country legally, at least in, let's call California here legally, how would you recommend? I mean, obviously, I can give the Board of Legal Specialization phone number, and I will, for people to look up their local in their county, their local certified specialist in immigration and nationality law. Let me do that right now. But then I'd like you to have you talk a bit about, are there other alternatives that people might have if they feel they can't afford to pay an attorney's fee? For example, the Board of Legal Specialization statewide number is 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100. If you want to go to the Internet, you can go to www.calbar.ca.gov and go to Legal Specialists, which if you go over to the left side of the screen, you'll find Legal Specialists there. Again, it's www.calbar.ca.gov and go to Legal Specialists. And you will be able to, whether you use the phone number or use the Internet, you'll be able to find out who the legal specialists are in your area. If someone feels he, she, or they can't afford an attorney's fees, I mean, people understand that attorneys are charging perhaps at a minimum $200 an hour and probably more, like $300 or $400 an hour. What recommendation do you have, if any, for someone who is trying to get help and who does not want to go to someone who may be incompetent or may be a scammer?
They should have a consultation with an attorney who can evaluate their situation and tell them what may or may not be possible. In immigration, the general rule is an attorney will charge for that, but if someone has information, then they're much better able to protect themselves. There are, I believe, 176 certified specialists in immigration in California now. That's certainly not enough to go around, and there are a lot of excellent immigration attorneys who are not yet certified specialists.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Who I suppose, people can find by calling their local bar association lawyer referral service and hopefully getting an appointment with someone on a half-hour basis, and it may cost $25 up to $35, which is certainly better to get a half an hour than no consultation at all.
And there are a number of nonprofit organizations, Chuck, that are legal organizations that provide free legal services. Generally, people have to meet minimum, low-income requirements.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And, unfortunately, those organizations are very strapped as well and
yes.
can't provide help to everybody who needs
how,
it.
How would you find on the Internet, how would you find such a nonprofit organization? Can you give us a thought on this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, to call the local bar association? Maybe that would be the way
I think that is a good idea. I think that most bar associations have a list of free legal services that they
mm-hmm.
can help provide to
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
They do have attorneys, most of these organizations, that can help. Some of them have legal clinics where people can come in and get advice for free.
Yes.
But again, it's, these organizations have funding challenges and often can't help everybody who needs it.
We are getting close to the end of the half hour, the statewide version of the program, and let me give you again the Board of Legal Specialization phone number, 415-538-2100, the Internet website, www.calbar.ca.gov, and go to Legal Specialist, one way of finding that. For those of you who are listening to us live, we will continue for another half hour and give you an opportunity to call in, ask questions, make comments, etc. All right, it is 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KALW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program, an update of immigration and nationality law issues. If you or someone close to you, a family member, a friend, has a question, a comment, a concern in the area of immigration and nationality law, I welcome you to join us on the program with your question, your comment. The number is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. And if you are listening to us on the Internet by radio at www.kalw.org, that's the same number you would use, 1-415-841-4134, and I welcome you to call in, ask your question, make your comment. If you've had a difficulty, in the area of immigration and nationality law, it might be interesting if you've overcome it for you to tell us briefly what your situation was and how you were able to overcome it. Before we take our first call, let me, for those of you who have come in just a little bit late, my guests are Mary Waltermeyer, immediate past chair of the Immigration and Nationality Law Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. She's a partner in the Sacramento law firm of Schoenleber and Waltermeyer. My other guest is Kelly McCown, partner in the San Francisco law firm of McCown and Evans. My guests are specialists in immigration and nationality law certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. And again, we do have a lot of people who want to talk to you, by the way. All of the incoming lines are now lighted. Let me just very, very briefly, before we take our first call, let me ask you both to chat a little bit about people who have been informed that one way you can stay here is if you're saying you need asylum. I know that has been a problem in the past. Mary, what's your thought on that?
Folks need to be screened very carefully. First, there is, in general, a one-year bar. If you do not apply for asylum within the first year that you're in the United States, then you lose the opportunity. Number two, if you do not have a good asylum claim, you may well find yourself in deportation proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
And number three, the laws are very strict about what's called a frivolous claim.
Mm-hmm.
If you file an asylum claim and anything in that claim is not true, you will be barred from any immigration benefit ever.
Oh, wow. That's very severe. Very, very severe. So you have to be very, very careful.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And applying for asylum, there are pluses and minuses. There is some risk to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think with what you're telling us is that it's very important that if someone, whatever the issue may be in immigration or nationality law, you really need to get some very good, sound legal advice and be very careful.
Getting legal advice is not necessarily the same thing as hiring an attorney.
Mm-hmm. Ah,
okay. You can come in for a consultation. You can learn about what your opportunities or options are and what the risks are, and then make your own decision about whether you want to pursue something or not. But at a minimum, people should try and get high-quality information. That little investment of money could have a dramatic impact on their family members.
Could have as much as a lifelong consequence if you don't get the right advice. Let me just mention to you, support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. The San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. You should be able to, if you call during normal business hours, you should be able to find that you're going to be able to speak to a live person. At least I hope you are. Still, with lawyer referral services, tell them what the problem is, whether it's immigration or whatever it may be. They'll do their best to find someone experienced for you and set you up for a half an hour consultation with the attorney. And you'll end up in most counties for a half an hour paying maybe a low of $25, maybe a high of $35. It's a great way to at least start to get some information and some support in terms of what the problem may be. All right, let's start with Silvestro. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Silvestro, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, sir.
Go ahead. It's your turn.
Thank you very much. I want to thank you and the expertise on the immigration cases. My question is to the expertise. I practically had a brother who had immigration problem. He came in this country as a refugee illegally, and he had been working. He had been filing all the taxes. He filed for his wife. His wife came and joined him over here, and after she arrived here a few weeks, she decided to abandon my brother, and then she left, and my brother became frustrated. He started going on the street, depression. He was being taken to the hospital, and from there, of course, with the depression, he entered in the confrontation with some legal, with the police on the street, some area he's not supposed to go to. He's going like laundry, sleeping in the laundry places. So he entered into those situations, but regardless of all this, we filed for his cases for green card. He went through, he did fingerprint, and the time when he was requested for interview, at that time he was in jail with police, with depression situation, which I was talking about, and as a result, he missed the interview time.
Mm-hmm.
So when...
Wait a minute. Silvestro, listen, we only have so much time and there are many, many people who want to talk with my guests. What is your question, if you have one?
Okay, my question is, how can such a person will be helped in order to continue to get his paperwork for green card.
What was the criminal charge against him, Silvestro? Do you know? What's it called?
There was no pure criminal charge against him.
Okay.
He was not being charged. He was being taken to custody, to the jail, because of misbehaving. Some of them we did call with the family member.
Okay, so let me stop you, Silvestro, there, because, and I take it your brother does not have an attorney, is that correct?
He does not have attorney, but we took him to the community organization attorney. She did file for him. That's why he was able to get a fingerprint.
Okay. Silvestro, let me get some comments from my guests to try to give you some direction. So perhaps, hopefully, you may be able to give your brother some direction. So if you turn your radio back up, and everyone, please understand that my guests are not able to, under State Bar's ethics rules, to give specific legal advice. I think you probably could understand that. We just don't have enough time to get all the facts, number one. But ethically speaking, the State Bar will not permit my guests to give specific legal advice. But on the other hand, we can, or my guests can, talk about general things that might be helpful to you should you have a problem. Mary, do you have any suggestions for Silvestro that he might make to his brother at this point?
Yes. First, I would recommend that he go back to the community organization that assisted with the green card. It may be that they have a Board of Immigration Appeals accredited representative there,
mm-hmm.
a non-attorney that can do some lawfully do some immigration law related things.
Mm-hmm,
they're
mm-hmm.
tested and screened, etc.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of community agencies out there that have BIA accredited folks.
What does that mean? What does BIA mean, please?
Board of Immigration Appeals.
Okay, good. Thank you.
An accredited representative that, and especially organizations that serve refugees. That would be the starting point.
Yes.
I'm not clear if there are any criminal bars, maybe just arrests. Those have to be disclosed.
Yes.
If mm-hmm. the case may or may not have been denied, he may or may not be able to reopen. There may be a number of options
yeah.
here, but the
yeah.
first step would be to go back to that same agency.
Okay.
And see if they could help. But it's important that everything be disclosed
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
the agency.
Yes.
Because it will need to, any arrests have to be disclosed to immigration.
Okay.
And maybe if it's been denied, they may be able to just file it again.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible.
Well, Silvestro, I hope you heard what my guest Mary Waltermeyer suggests, and I hope that you're able to help your brother go back to that community organization. We have Cam. Welcome to the program. Cam, are you there? Hello? Cam, are you there? Well, let's move on to Eric then. Eric, are you there? Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. So I have a general question about Form I-9. I think that's the form where you, when you go to, you know, start a job, they ask you, you know, whether you're a U.S. citizen and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've heard from others is that recently there was a court case that maybe determined whether kind of misrepresenting that on the I-9 form was kind of like a moral issue when if you were trying to adjust your immigration status. I was just wondering if that's true and whether you're aware of that court case.
Would you, Kelly, take that one at this
sure.
point?
Sure. So, Eric, the I-9 is the form that, just to let the listeners know, it's the form that employers use to verify employment eligibility of all workers, and mm-hmm. they require to
all
fill
workers,
that out for everyone.
Not just people who are trying to be here legally.
That's right, even
okay.
U.S. citizens and permanent
right.
residents.
Okay.
And part of the form is completed by the foreign worker or the, you know, U.S. worker, whatever the case may be, and part of it's filled out by the employer. I think the issue that Eric's alluding to is really a question about whether making a false statement on the form as to your immigration status could be considered fraud and would then bar you from future immigration benefits.
Yes.
And it's a complicated topic because... it's not, first of all, it's not interpreted the same way in every state, in every jurisdiction. So there may be different case law on this in the Ninth Circuit, where we are here in California, than there would be in another state.
Yes.
In the
but
federal
it would be
court.
Federal law. It'd be a federal court that's
right.
interpreted this. All right.
So, you know, I've researched this a number of times, and it is complicated. The form has questions about what the person's immigration status is, and part of the analysis might be what the form actually said at the time the person completed it, because the form's mm-hmm. been revised several times.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So it's really not possible to generalize too much about what the impact would be without knowing more of the facts. And I think mm-hmm. this would be a case where if there's some concern, Eric, over a statement made by somebody on that form, it would be... if the person's a foreign national, an immigrant, to consult with an immigration attorney on that. I'm not aware of, outside the immigration context, the issue of whether that could cause problems, let's say, if a U.S. citizen makes mm-hmm. a false statement. I don't mm-hmm. know, Mary, if you're aware of the case that Eric is talking about.
I'm not certain about the case. The I-9, I believe, is completed under penalty of perjury, mm-hmm. which means, in theory, if someone made a false statement, they could be prosecuted.
Sure. Yeah.
Another issue is if someone who is not a U.S. citizen claims to be a U.S. citizen when they fill out that form. As you said, Kelly, it's been revised over the years, and so it was... There are legal arguments and legal complications based on old forms that are different now.
Mm-hmm.
This is definitely something that someone should have a consultation with an immigration attorney to figure out, particularly if the person is an immigrant. They should get advice. I'm not sure the context of all of this.
I see. Well, that kind of helps. I mean, you know, this is... someone filled this out many, many years ago, and it's not even clear what the form said at the time.
Do you have does the person who filled out the form have a copy of the form, Eric?
I don't think so.
Really?
I mean, I think this is probably, at least 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like you guys are not aware of a recent court case that kind of maybe change the way, I always knew that it was a complicated issue, but it sounds like there's not a recent court case that kind of clarified this issue.
I think, Eric, this is Kelly, I think there was a case fairly recently, but it actually dealt with a criminal prosecution. It wasn't an immigration case dealing with a possible false claim to mm-hmm. U.S. citizenship. Mm-hmm. I think the case might be Karuni, and I wish I could spell that for you, but... I think it's K-A-R-O-U-N-I in the Ninth Circuit. That is a case I remember reading recently, and it really has, you have to look at the facts in these cases because this one dealt with a kind of a different type of situation.
I think, Eric, if you wanted to, you could go to the internet and Google the Karuni case or Google... the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and put in as a subhead Karuni and see what you can find. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Take care. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guests are Kelly McCown and Mary Waltermeyer. They are both specialists in immigration and nationality law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. The number here, in case you have a question or a comment, is 1-415-841-4134. And I hope I pronounced this correct and correctly. And please, if you would, correct me if I've done some harm to the pronunciation of your name. Manju?
Yes, Manju.
Oh, I got it right. Good. Well, you're on the air. Welcome to the program.
thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you for having this program.
Thank you.
My brother passed 2012 November, and he was a U.S. citizen about 3 years or 4 years before he passed. And he has an 18-year-old back home. She's 18 right now.
18-year-old child.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we try to get her a visa to visit in Christmas, but they rejected the visa, and now I'm thinking maybe I should, if there's possibility to use the deceased father citizenship for her to get a green card.
What country, what country is your niece in?
In West Africa, Burkina Faso.
In West Africa, okay. Let me see if I can get some comments. Where do you live, by the way?
I live in Richmond.
In Richmond,
so you're
Alameda County, right?
Yes.
Okay. Let me get some comments for you. There was no procedure that had been started, is that right, to try to get your brother's 18-year-old child into this country? No procedure yet filed?
No.
Nothing. Okay, well, let me see if I can get some comments for you. I think it would be wise for you and your family, as we've discussed, to try to get some direct legal advice from an attorney. I hope you wrote down either the phone number or the internet address for the Board of Legal Specialization. Did you?
I did not.
All right. Do you have something to write? Do you have something to write with?
I think so.
Okay. All right. Turn your radio back on so that you can hear the answer, and then try to find something to write with. I'm going to give the number again, okay?
Okay.
And for everybody, and thank you for calling, Manju. For everyone just turn your radio back up, hang up, and turn your radio back up, okay?
Yeah. I also want to add that he has a daughter here with a different mother.
Well, is the daughter here legally?
With a different mother here. She's born here.
I think we're getting into too many issues right now, Manju. We're going to try to do the one where the child is in West Africa, but hang up and turn your radio back up, will you?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and one of the things I want to mention, and the reason that I started this program nearly 30 years ago, which will be next month, is the 30th anniversary of Your Legal Rights, was to try to educate people in their legal rights and try to prevent problems. And for Manju and anybody else who's listening to the program, any time you may have a legal problem, always have a piece of paper and a pencil or a pen ready to write, because I try to give information that may give you something, some direction of where to go. Now, for Manju, I would suggest for your family, you might want to contact the Board of Legal Specialization. There are two things I want you to write down, and I hope you now have something to write with. 415-538-2100. And on the internet, it's www.calbar.ca.gov. And go to Legal Specialists, and you will be able to find either through the phone number or the internet who the legal specialists are in your area. And Martin's is just handing me a note. I've already told them, Martin, we're going to have Call a Lawyer next week. But thank you for letting me know. So do you have some comments for Manju with regard to her niece who is in West Africa? Mary, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah.
She wants to use her brother's citizenship, her brother who is deceased, to try to see if they can get in his 18-year-old daughter here.
There are a lot of things that I don't know, and so, of course, I can't give complete
information. Of course.
It sounds as though the brother never filed any paperwork for his daughter.
Yeah.
If he had filed a visa petition for her, there is a process called humanitarian reinstatement, where you can ask that the papers that your relative filed for you, the relative who has died, not be canceled out and that you still be allowed to immigrate through them.
My goodness.
I assume the mother of the girl is not in the United States.
I think that's correct. There is the mother of another girl, but not apparently this particular 18-year-old.
How the father initially immigrated, there's something called following to join. It may be a very long shot, but mm-hmm. sometimes you can, depending on how your parent immigrated, you may also be able to immigrate at a later date.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not certain whether the death of that relative would affect that.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Pardon me, Mary, go ahead.
She also said that the father only became a U.S. citizen a few years ago.
Yes.
So that would mean the child did not acquire U.S. citizenship.
Uh-huh.
If she wasn't here and didn't have a green card, then she wouldn't have benefited from her father's citizenship to automatically become a U.S. citizen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's going to be anything possible here. There's also humanitarian parole,
mm-hmm.
depending on the daughter's situation. In certain extreme situations, you can ask that you be allowed to come in. A U.S. citizen sister can file a visa petition for you mm-hmm. once she's an adult, but the waiting list is over a decade.
Yes.
But there's not enough information here to see whether there might be some other avenue or whether any of the ones I've talked about would actually work.
You know, Manju, one of the things I want to mention to you also, I hope you got the phone number for the Board of Legal Specialization and the Internet website. But also, since you are in Alameda County, I hope that you realize that if you call the Alameda County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service, that you may also be able to get an appointment with a qualified immigration and nationality law attorney. I'll give you the Alameda County Bar Association phone number. You can start with that for a half an hour consultation at it's anywhere between $25 to $35, 510-302-2222. 510-302-2222. You really need to start doing some work on this with qualified persons who are attorneys who can give you some direction. So good luck to you. All right, let's talk now with Pam. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to first say how great this program is. I've been listening for a couple of years, and I just think it's terrific.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome. I've got a question. My fiancé and I are engaged, of course, to be married. He's Canadian. I'm an American citizen, born here. At the top of the program, one of the attorneys commented on pitfalls for newlyweds in immigrating to the United States. Can you talk a little bit more about what those might be?
Kelly, would you like to take this?
Sure. I mean, I think there are a number of reasons that people are not eligible to immigrate even through a U.S. citizen spouse, which I'm assuming perhaps you are. So there might be some issues with bars if there's been past immigration fraud or overstays, or if your fiancé has entered without inspection. Those are some of the kind of red flags that could arise in a case. In terms of, you know, process, there are a number of ways for you and your fiancé to be together, including fiancé visa petition that you could file from the United States so that he could go through a process through a U.S. consulate in Canada and get a visa to come in as your fiancé. And then once he's here, you could marry and apply for a green card for him. There's also a process called consular processing where you could sponsor him for a visa petition and then he could come again, get his green card in Canada and enter the United States. So that's generally an overview of kind of what the process is. Does that help with your question?
Yeah, so I think the takeaway I'm getting is that we should start the process while he's still in Canada. And we don't have any of the red flag issues. We're both retired, so I'm not sure if that's a red flag in and of itself.
Well, you sound awful young to me, Pam.
Well, thank you.
You got a very youthful voice. Did you get the phone number for the Board of Legal Specialization as well as the website address?
I sure did.
Yeah, okay. I think it's certainly worth it for both of you, since I'm hoping that both of you have pensions.
Yes.
Good. All right. So now you can afford to get some legal help, I hope. So try finding out. What city do you live in?
San Francisco.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's a good likelihood you're going to find some very qualified, certified specialists in immigration and nationality law in San Francisco. So good luck to you.
Thank you very
I'd
much.
Like
I'll
add one
that.
More thing.
Yeah, one more thing, Pam. Mary has for you.
Yes.
Do get advice from someone qualified, Pam, and be aware that once you start this process, he may not be able to visit you.
Yeah,
there could be problems if he tries to come visit you once paperwork has been filed.
Really? How fascinating.
Well, once the paperwork is filed, it's an indication that he wants to come here as an immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not appropriate for him to come in as a visitor, and he can be turned around.
What does that mean, be turned around?
You try and drive across the border. You try and get on that airplane.
Oh, really?
And they say, no, wow. You're not allowed to come in.
All right.
And there can be very negative legal ramifications
yeah.
from that.
Yeah.
So, Pam, get information, get a picture of the whole process before you start anything.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate that. That I would not have expected would be one of the consequences.
Yeah, you be careful now, Pam.
Thank you.
Tell him to behave himself and stay away, huh? Okay. All right. Thank you
very
much. Thank you very much for calling. Bye-bye. All right. I think we have time for one more brief question. Abraham, welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. And I also want to say thank you for this great service you guys are providing.
Well, thank you for saying that.
All right. I actually think I have a relatively simple and straightforward question. I'm trying to apply for my citizenship, and I realized that my green card has expired, so I was wondering if I have to renew that before I apply for my citizenship.
Very good question. Well, Mary, what should he do?
Oh, goodness gracious. I don't know the answer to this.
Okay.
I think that immigration's official policy is if your green card is already expired, you're supposed to renew it before you apply.
Okay.
But on an unofficial level, if you just go ahead and apply, are they going to reject your application?
That's a big issue, isn't it?
If you have to renew it, it costs $400 and some in filing fees. It's, it's a chunk of money.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to avoid having to pay for that and for the citizenship application, basically.
Exactly. And unfortunately, I know what the official policy is, but I don't know whether that is actually enforced.
You better try to get some advice from an attorney face-to-face, Abraham. Good luck. We have run out of time. I want to thank you both very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Great to have you back, Mary Waltermeyer and Kelly McCown. Very nice to have you back here. Both are certified specialists in immigration and nationality law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Next week, by the way, everybody, we have Call a Lawyer Night, 1-800-525-9917. You'll be able to talk with attorneys off the air if you have questions in a variety of areas. On the air, I will be doing a program, actually a discussion of recent U.S. Supreme Court decisions. My guests will be Stephen Mayer, a certified specialist in appellate law, Jeff Hayden, certified specialist in criminal law, and Myron Moskowitz, constitutional law professor at Golden Gate Law School. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Additional funding is provided by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. I thank you very much for joining us on this program, and I hope you will join us next week for Call a Lawyer Night, starting at 7 o'clock, 1-800-525-9917, if you listen to us live. I'm Chuck Finney.
Bye.